Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant this week, featuring one of his associates there at the firm, Daniel Olero. Hi there, Danielle.
Hi.
Good to see you once again.
Yeah.
Really involved discussion last week, talking about what is a will, getting down to basics. We started moving into the subject of what is probate, which is a huge subject, and you wanted to continue this week on some of the, what did you call it?
The mechanics of probate. How does it actually work?
The mechanics of probate. How does it actually work? Okay, well, why don't you tell us?
Yeah, so I just want to give a kind of a 50,000-foot flyover of what does probate actually look like. So you've heard a lot of different discussions about how you avoid probate, that probate's this thing that you want to avoid, but I don't hear a lot of what does it actually mean for me to walk somebody through probate. So they walk into my office, and we talked about last week that that at the firm I do about 90% of what I do is closing trusts and wills. So
this is regardless of whether they have a plan with your firm.
That's exactly right.
People come to you and just say, you know, this is a mess, or I didn't even have a will.
Yep.
What do I do next?
That's exactly right. Yep. And so so they come to us with a will, and they say, I know that I got to open up this probate. What does that even mean? So the first thing that we talked about last week is we have to wait for the death certificates to arrive. So that's going to be 7 to 10 days after someone's passed away that those death certificates are going to come. Now, that's the thing that I'm going to need in order to open up the probate. So there's a couple of different documents that I have to produce for the court in order for them to open up the probate. The first one is called a petition. So that petition is saying somebody has passed away, they had or didn't have a will. And I'm entitled to act as their personal representative. So that's what it's called here in Washington State, personal representative. I'm entitled to step into that person's shoes and start closing their accounts because either, number one, the statute says I can because they didn't have a will, or because I'm named in the will in some way. Another thing to note is that if you are named in a will and you're just not in a place in life where you can really do that job or do it
well. Yeah, I would think that would happen a lot.
It actually does.
A surviving spouse who's also perhaps elderly and just doesn't want to be bothered with this.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I see that actually quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So there is a way for you to decline to serve, and there's nothing wrong with it. So I want you to hear that there's nothing wrong in saying, you know what, I'm just at a place. Again, when you lose somebody, you're in an emotional spot. And so just because you're named in the will does not make you have to actually serve in that capacity.
Okay.
So a petition is going to ask for what we call letters testamentary. So letters testamentary, so the death certificate is the key to open up the probate. Letters testamentary is the key to open up all of those accounts. So one of the things we talked about last time is don't start making alterations to accounts, don't start closing accounts, all of those things. The reason is letters testamentary, that's going to be the key. So that we're asking the court to issue those. There's going to be an oath that you have to sign as a personal representative. So you're basically saying, under Washington state law, I'm not disqualified as serving personal representative. So a minor can't serve as a personal representative. Somebody who's committed a felony can't serve as a personal representative. Hmm. If you're of unsound mind. So there's different categories that Washington state has said you can't serve as a personal representative. So you're going to sign an oath that says you don't fit any of those qualifications.
Minor would be 18 or 21?
18. Yep.
Okay.
And then there's going to be an order, and so that's going to be what the judge is ultimately going to sign to say, yes, go ahead and issue these letters testamentary. So then I go into court, and I ask the judge to sign this order, and then they say, yep, everything looks in order, and so we're going to issue the letters testamentary. So that's just a document that the court clerk signs and steals. And then ultimately says, okay, now you can go in and you can start managing this person's estate. So letters testamentary, you hear that a lot. People ask me a lot, well, I called the bank and they asked me for letters testamentary. This is the process to actually getting those letters.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I had to start doing this as an executor, I had to have the death certificate, to show the bank, and I also had to have the trust. Because she had a trust, a living trust. I can't remember what the one. They didn't have to go through the whole trust, but there was like one document that showed them I had the power of attorney or whatever.
Yep. So there will be different documents that you need. So yes, if there is a trust, then you'll need different documents than what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. That the letters testamentary essentially take the place of what you were talking about before. So the death certificate plus the letters of testamentary is what the
and different banks have different procedures on that too. Some will let you do it right on the spot when you walk in. Others, no, it's going to take 2 weeks or a month or whatever.
That's very true. Yes,
that's kind of a pain.
Yes, and so we try to walk clients through. I do this a lot, so I have a lot of experience with different institutions. So Bank of America might be different than U.S. Bank, which might be different than a credit union. Mm-hmm. So we try to walk people through that. But yes, sometimes it takes a much longer time than people will think.
Right.
And ultimately,
they don't
want to
turn loose of those finances.
Yes, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And it's good for them. They want to make sure that they're protecting themselves and making sure that it's going to go to the right people. And so, but all this entire process, honestly, always takes longer than anybody wants.
Right. Yeah, I found that as being the executor again, some family wanted their check tomorrow and so they could head on down the road. And I said, wait a minute, I just can't.
Yes.
I can't process it that quickly. And that caused problems.
Yep.
All kinds
of
hurt feelings.
Yep. Institutions cause a lot of time delays. But also, I mean, personal representatives, they're always people. And this is always something that they're doing in addition to whatever they were doing before. If they were a mom before, they're still a mom now. They have a full-time job before, they still have a full-time job now. So we have to remember that as we're walking through this. And I know it's really hard when you're not really a part of that process to remember that ultimately they're people and they're also grieving.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're moving along here then. So as you start paying debts and those get paid by the accounts, if there is no assets, just a lot of debts, what happens?
Yeah, so one of the first things that we're going to do after you get the letters testamentary is start addressing the debts. And so one of the things we talked about last time is please don't start paying debts. And so that is something that is counterintuitive to some people. Mom and dad always paid their debts on time. And so that's what we want to do as well in order to honor their memory. Mm. We ask you not to do that. And if that means that we have to ask for an extension, then that's what we need to do. And the reason for that is because there is a way that we're going to actually make sure that those are debts that need to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
So
what if they're facing, though, like I say, just debt, only debts, large debts that there is no money to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing there?
Yeah, good question.
They have no money to pay any debts, but they have a mountain of them.
Yep. So we're going to not pay those debts. And one of the first things that we're actually going to do, regardless of the size of the estate, is you're going to get letters testamentary, and we're going to start going through, and we want to see what's actually in the estate. So ultimately, we want to come up with, it's called an inventory, which is what does the estate hold at the time that someone's passed away? And then what kind of interest or what's gone in and out of that of the estate since then. So we're going to come up with how much actually is there in the estate itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during that time, we're also pulling everything out of the decedent's social security number. So that bank account is running under their social security number. We can't use that anymore. So during that time, we're going to be getting an estate. It's called an estate EIN number or an estate tax ID number. So that is a separate tax ID number, so we can remove everything out of the decedent's social security number. And now we're going to start transferring everything. So you're going to open up a new, essentially, bank account or other kinds of accounts, and then move everything into that account. And that's going to help us get that inventory I was talking about. Mm. So and the value of that, because everything's going up and down, if there's a if something's in the stock markets and things like that, the value of that really is going to be the date that the person passed away. What was the value of all of those accounts?
What if again, getting back to debts and versus assets, person dies, they had good intentions in their will saying so-and-so gets this, that, and the other thing, but it turns out their debts are way more than anything they have to give to any family.
Mm-hmm.
So who's left to hold in the bag there? The debtor or the person who, you know, the institution that's owed money or the family member who is hoping for a nice payday?
Yeah. So unfortunately, so now after we see what the inventory is, now, yes, we're going to look at what the debts are. And so there is a statute that says, you know, here are the debts that have to be paid and in what order. So there is an order.
Okay.
Unfortunately, yes, beneficiaries are sort of last on that list.
Yeah.
Now, there is a way that we can go through here in Washington State and actually start to try to take care of some of those debts and see if we can lessen that.
Mm.
And that involves that we do what's called a notice to creditors. And so we publish something in a newspaper that says so-and-so has passed away. And if you have any debts that you think are owed by the estate, then you need to tell us within the next 4 months, and then we'll consider whether or not we should pay that debt.
And can the personal representative pay those debts themselves? Is that where they're sometimes on the hook, or what happens with that?
So good question. So no, you as a personal representative are never on the hook for someone else's debt.
Okay.
So if you get into a situation, and I've had this before, that someone thinks that someone else has more funds than they do. Turns out they had a lot of debt and not as many assets as we thought. Well, you as a personal representative are not personally responsible for any debts that that person had. So the statute is going to tell us after we've
the extended family or other people.
Right.
No, the family is not. So this is a misnomer that the family has to go to prison to pay off the debts of the deceased person.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
So you as a family member, you as a beneficiary, you as a personal representative, you are not responsible for the debts of someone who's passed away. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that you don't get as much or nothing at all, unfortunately, from that person's estate, but you're not going to be personally responsible to pay those debts.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah. And so people, I think that that's one thing that people need to understand is that Washington State actually wants people to close the estate of somebody else. Because if they have to get involved, then that's money and time that they have to use that they really don't have.
Mm.
So there are rules in place in order to make sure that you do your job well, but they don't want to have you have a target on your back all the time. They don't want to throw you in jail. They want to encourage you to actually close somebody's estate.
Okay. Well, this is a okay place to take a break here, talking about the extent of probate and how does it actually work, who's responsible to pay what. I have a question for you when we come back from the break, Danielle, about the house and how they handle that after someone passes away. But people are intrigued by your processes there at Planning with Purpose. Danielle Olero, an associate of Paul Grant, talking with us this week. How do people get in touch with your firm, Danielle?
Yeah, so they can get onto legacyandfaith.com in order to learn more about us and learn more about our firm and sit down and talk with us.
Okay, back with more in just a moment on the Legacy and Faith Show.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, this week we're talking with Danielle Olero, an associate of Paul Grant at the firm Planning with Purpose, talking about the ins and outs of probate. And just before the break, I said I'd have a question about property, and often you think the biggest asset of someone's estate was their home. But what if the home is worthless, or it has it's underwater, so to speak? More is owed on it than it's actually worth.
Yeah. But
like for me, example, that is what happened in an estate that I was involved in. I just turned it back to the mortgage company.
Yeah, and that's sometimes what needs to happen, whether it's a home or whether it's a car.
Happens more with cars a lot of times.
Yeah, recently I've seen it happen more with cars, that's a car is worth less than what's actually owed to the bank. And so part of a personal representative's job is to make decisions in the best interest of the estate and all of the beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that does mean that it goes back to the bank, whether it be a house or a car, and to just kind of get that out, not get anything from it, but also not spend a whole lot of time, dealing with that asset is actually what's in the best interest of the estate and all the beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, yes, there are ways of dealing with debts and things like that pretty quickly. And sometimes that is what ultimately happens.
Okay. So then what happens after? Let's say all the debts are paid now. And what's the next step?
Yeah. So now all the debts are paid and
settled.
Yes. And so there's a few different ways that we can actually settle out those debts. So as I was saying before, make sure to call so that we can minimize that as much as possible if that's one of the issues there. But now we've also gotten our inventory of what's actually in the estate itself. So this is the process that takes the most amount of time, is paying off the debts and then getting that inventory. Mm. We're also, during that time, we're probably also getting the house ready to sell and getting it sold. So there's a lot of different steps that are taking place during this time. So this is going to be the longest period of time for beneficiaries.
How long? Years?
Hopefully not years. Yes. So an easy probate for me is going to take a minimum of 6 months.
Minimum of six.
Mm-hmm. And that can go all the way up to years, just depending on, what the family's doing and things like that. And that's, again, an easy probate. That means that there's not very many assets. We know where everybody is. So that can really be, I would say it's more an average about 12 months. And also if there's a house that's involved and things like that, 6 to 9 months of that really is cleaning up the house and getting it ready to sell.
Yeah.
And so it can really be quite a bit.
And depending on the market, not such a problem in Seattle market, but sometimes it can take a long time to sell a house.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you have unique property or things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what about, so this sounds like this is quite involved. You're involved, you're helping, you're doing a lot of phone time, like you say. But it sounds like the personal representative or the executor, a lot of this is on their shoulders too. So they're doing quite a bit of work.
They really are. They really are. Uh-huh. And so the good news about that is that you can. So I always encourage people to keep track of their time and their expenses. And you can charge a reasonable fee for your time. Now, I have a lot of people come to me at the very beginning, not knowing what they're getting into.
Right. Say, I don't want anything. I'm just doing it out of the love of my heart.
That's exactly right.
Go, wow, what did I get involved in here?
Yes. Uh-huh. That is usually the reaction, is that I had no idea how much time this was going to take from me. And so ultimately, if you decide that you don't want to charge it, then you don't have to. But if you didn't track it, it's really hard to go back and retroactively try to make how much time did you really spend. So one of the things at the beginning of the process to make sure that you're tracking your time so that you can charge to the estate if that's what you decide is that you want to do. Mm. So going back to the last question, which is, so now everything has been paid off. You know what's actually in the estate itself. Now we're going to start letting the beneficiaries know what's actually in the estate. So yes, there is a certain amount of record keeping as a personal representative that you also have to do. And you do have to give that to your beneficiaries when you're ready to start actually basically cutting the checks, mm-hmm. so to speak.
People, the beneficiaries, people named in the will, are they privy to how the will was doled out? Does everybody get to know, or just the personal representative?
Good question. So at the very beginning of the process, we do have to send them. So there's a series of different notices that we have to send to different people, and the beneficiaries are included in that. That's part of why it takes so much longer, is that there are certain notices that we have to give. Part of that is for the beneficiaries. They get to know that they are a beneficiary of the will, and then they do get to see what was in the will, so how much that they are going to be getting. Mm. And then at the end of the process, they get to know what was in the estate, where, what interest has been earned, what has gone in and
Everybody
out.
Everybody should be privy to that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So then we will send them basically what's come in and out of the estate, what bills have we paid and everything. And so now we're going to calculate how much that beneficiary is going to get. So if they're getting, let's just say it's two siblings, 50-50, here's what's in the estate itself, and so here's what you're going to receive. And we're going to actually ask them to sign off to say, yep, I agree with that. And so this is another place where it can get hung up for a little bit, is because now we're starting to deal with family dynamics. Mm. You know, I took care of mom, and so I should get more than that, or I don't think that you've, you know, managed the estate as well as you should have, those types of things. Mm. So we can start having some of those discussions. So family dynamics, this is where it's going to come into play.
How often do you see that? Would you say most of the time, half the time?
I would say, specifically with wills, I would say it's about half the time that I see that.
And they launch their own lawsuits over these things, too, right? How often does that happen?
That actually doesn't happen too often, thankfully.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So there can be a lot of discussions. I mean, you can imagine, if you think of your own siblings, I'm sure, that there's, you know, everybody has their own different relationships with their siblings. I love my brother, but you put grief and you put money in the middle of him and I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so some of those things start to come out. But really, ultimately, people... when you look at, is it worth opening up a lawsuit over it, typically there's not going to be enough gain in order to do that. And so I actually don't see that a huge amount of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really good.
Yeah.
But now we're going to start actually making the distributions to those beneficiaries. So which sounds good and easy, and then we're going to close out the probate. But one of the things that I see most often is that we also start looking at the beneficiaries themselves. So a will is going to say, just write them a check and give them their money, which sounds really good. But there are certain kinds of individuals that we're going to start looking at and going, oh, I don't know if they should get this money. The state has one of those, which is minors. So if you're under 18, we can't actually write you a check. So minors, if you have minor children, then...
Where does it go?
Yeah, so exactly.
Does it go into some kind of a trust or something until they reach 18 or...
So if there's nothing that's made in the will itself for those minor children, then the court is going to decide. It's ultimately going to go into something that is conserved for their benefit, yes. That could be that's oftentimes a trust, yes. And then the court's going to say, who is going to look after that money for you? And that is actually a lot of the times a professional. So it's going to cost a lot of money to manage that if it's not planned for well.
Mm.
But the court is not going to allow that minor to be able to actually just get that money or have it sit in a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Special needs beneficiaries. I've actually seen this quite a bit, is that the will says, well, give them so much of my estate. Well, in order to qualify for the benefits that they need, they can't actually receive that money. So if it's not being received in a trust or in a way that they can actually receive it, then they're faced with either being disqualified from their benefits or actually holding up their hands and saying, no, I actually don't want this inheritance, which, of course, is not your intent. That's why they were in the will, is to be able to benefit from that money. But it really disrupts their lifestyle. It really disrupts, you know, what they're going to be able to do. And so special needs beneficiaries is a big one that I see quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. Well, the last point on your list here is, so if I'm married, things will automatically go to my spouse, so I do not really need a plan. I guess we've already dispelled that by these last two shows.
Yeah,
we need a plan.
Yes, exactly.
Because that is a lot of people's plan.
Yes.
I have no plan. I'm just going to give it to my wife.
Yes. And that is one thing that I see, whether it be surviving spouses or other family members, mm-hmm. is really just that I make a lot of assumptions. I don't really need a plan. And everything's going to happen just as I desire it to. And so I see that a lot. I would say, 90% of the time it actually doesn't work out like you want it to.
Yeah.
So please plan. It needs to be a holistic plan, looking at your entire family. What does that mean? You can give us a call or give an attorney a call, but please plan.
That's the name of your firm, Planning with Purpose, the law offices of Paul Grant, of course, the Legacy and Faith Show. You're listening to that this week. We've been hearing from one of his associates, Danielle Olero. And how do people get in touch with your firm again?
Yeah, so you can get on to legacyandfaith.com. You can learn more about us and get in touch with us.
Okay, always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.